Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our 5th season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
Andrew normally say, no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can't do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Pod. As always, brought to you by sportsshoes.com. As you can see from the title, Mr. John Heyman's on the podcast today. Great to speak to the Belgian 5K athlete a couple weeks ago now, Matt. Just about life on the elite circuit and life as an unsponsored pro.
Yeah, what an interesting story, to be honest. We have a few, you know, athletes, I guess we can resonate this story with in the UK, you know, those who go from, you know, sort of just starting out, getting passionate about running, and they just, you know, transferring into a bloody fully fledged elite. But he's had a very aggressive progression through the sport. And I think he's took some aggressive measures as well. Like, you know, he even admits, you know, sort of quitting alcohol when he was very much an amateur, and, you know, his friends sort of questioning that decision and questioning his reasoning behind it. But then, you know, it paid off. And I think he's had a refreshing mentality towards the sport, hasn't he? In a sense that he kind of just, he loved it. And every decision he made was because he just wanted to get that little bit better. It wasn't this monk-like lifestyle he was setting himself because he had these lofty of ambitions of bloody winning Olympic Games and breaking world records. It was more just like, he didn't really see them as sacrifices. They were just like decisions he wanted to take just to get better and better. And then now he finds himself, what, low 13-minute man?
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's almost, if you're a Brit listening, as most of you are, and you don't know John Heyman's story, he's essentially Kate Axford, but he's taken it all the way to the Olympic Games. You know, he's come from an elite hockey setup over in Belgium, where it's a massive sport over there. Didn't think he could make their national team in hockey, and then switched over to running when he started university. And like Matt said, was part of kind of a fraternity over there, and was going out drinking, I think he says, kind of 5 nights a week or so, maybe even more. And he managed to make a Euro cross while doing that, and then was like, okay, well, I better, like Matt says, I better kind of cut back on a few of those things and just keep improving. But what's so cool about him is how much he shares on social media as well. And we asked him about that, how it potentially interferes with the training he does do, but also how he's able to connect with so many people around the world and find inspiration from them too.
Yeah, exactly that, man. I think he's doing a great job at balancing it all. So he's certainly a relatable athlete to a lot of people. We'll let John tell his story. And I was just looking as well. I just wanted to mention it's obviously Boston this weekend, so a fitting time. By the time you lot are listening to this, you may have seen some crazy results come out of Boston. You know, I think Wildschut's doing it, Gressier's doing it, obviously John Heyman's is doing it, a few Canadians, there's a whole host of collegians. So this is going to be a fast weekend in Boston. And on that, it's worth noting, you know, rumors of the entry fee for Boston being north of $150. And mate, guess I thought I'd just browse the entries. There's over 150 entered in the 5K. And that's pretty much those sorts of numbers. The same for every, they've obviously got the 3000, they've got the mile, and they've got the 60s, and it's just a weekend. And the money that this the organizing committee must be making is just extortionate. Because there's hardly, I mean, there's not really many costs to put on an indoor meet when it's your own facility, right? It's not like a road race and you've got to close roads. So they're doing a phenomenal job. They probably deserve every penny, but it's quite eye-watering sums of money.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess per event, they're looking at like $20,000 in entry fees.
Yeah. I mean, you can't blame. I mean, if that then goes back into making the event better next year or being able to put on more Boston meets so that more athletes have the opportunity to run those quick times, I think that's perfectly fair, right? I think it's a great way to do it. If it just goes into lining pockets of the university, maybe I'm not so sure, you know. So,
well, yeah, I guess it depends where it's
directed afterwards, right?
Yeah, they had to pay for the track, but I mean, they've just got the monopoly over there. You know, really have. So,
but like you said, mate, potentially the kind of governing bodies are sniffing around and making Boston illegal. So maybe they'll use that to prevent that from happening. So that might be a potential way.
As we said, I don't think they'll ever be able to police, that track. So look, we'll leave you to it. And obviously, if you are listening on a Sunday, we're recording right now on a Friday. I'm about to go lay some flooring in the hallway Friday evening. That will be the antics I'll be doing, and obviously taking my mind off Bucks. So we'll be back with a review podcast next week with all things Boston, Bucks, and whatever else is going on.
Yeah, 100%. So thanks very much for listening. As always, enjoy this episode with John, and we'll catch you guys very, very soon. Okay, John, firstly, thanks for joining us. Great to have you on. And just how are you, first of all? How are you settling in Flagstaff?
I'm doing very good. I'm almost always very good.
Good to hear, mate. Good to hear. And we just kind of set off there. We want to kind of run it back right to the start and how you got into running, because you came from playing quite a high level in another sport as well.
Yeah, so my background is in field hockey, not like ice hockey, like most of the people know. It's a very popular sport in Belgium. And then at a certain age, at 18 years old, I knew that I couldn't make the national team. And so I was quite frustrated. And then I wanted to change sports to still like practice sport at a high level. And my physical coach told me, yeah, John, I see that you're quite good at endurance. Like you beat guys that are like 5 years older than you. And so I think you should start running marathons. And when I went to college, I contacted my college or I don't know anymore. And I told them I'm looking for a marathon coach. And then they gave me my coach and we are working now for 8 years together.
And you haven't run a marathon yet, though. Or have you?
No. My coach told me, John, I see you have talent. So you're going to run on the track. I was like, what? Running at the 400 on this red thing? Never.
This is great. How is, obviously, you kind of gave up the hockey dream, but how is distance running and running in general seen in Belgium compared to perhaps other European nations, or is it very similar?
How do you mean, if it's a popular sport?
Yeah, like, I guess, how do do the public engage in distance running? How's it seen?
Not really. Like, in Belgium, the most popular sports are cycling and football, soccer. Uh-huh. And then running is quite an unknown sport, but I don't care about it. It's a beautiful sport and I enjoy it. That's what matters.
Yeah, because I was just going to say, when your coach told you to go take up marathon running and start that journey, were you a bit confused, or were you just, you saw the sport and you wanted to participate in it as quickly as you could?
Yeah, I was a typical amateur that didn't know anything about running. So for me, the longer, the better. I was like, all right, I'm going to run marathons and then ultra marathons and then all this stuff. And my coach told me, no, you're going to run the track 3K, 5K. I'm like, what? What's the point of running like a couple of laps around the track to run a fast 5K? And took me a couple of years to get used to it.
Yeah. And do you remember what your first race was when you first started?
On the track, you mean? Or my first race was in cross country.
Okay.
And my first track race, it was a 1500 meter. Yeah, I ran a sub-4.
Sub-4, first 1500. That's pretty good going,
yeah,
actually.
Then I was only running like for 7 or 8 months. And that's when my coach, I didn't know. And I was like, all right, I don't know what that means. But my coach told me, yeah, I think, John, you're made for running.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Are you by the way, we don't really know who your coach is, and I'm not sure, you know, many people listening will. I've seen various bits and pieces, you know, you self-coach quite a lot, or you have a lot of ideas yourself and you implement them. So who is coaching you currently? Is it still that same person you were working with in college?
Yeah. It's still the same person. His name is Wim Water. Like, it's kind of an unknown coach because it's not in the running space to make money or something like that, or to make a name for himself. He's just the one that's passionate. He's doing it for free. And it's like a university group. So it's not a professional group I'm running with. And it's not his main job. His main job is like being an archaeologist.
Yep.
In fish bones. So it's like a fish expert. It's kind of nice.
Niche.
And then besides that, we gather two times per week in Leuven. It's quite a famous city in Belgium for running. Yeah, it's like, I have a good vibe with him. So there's no point in changing and winning team.
And it sounds like, are you both learning together? Or has he had previous, yeah, you mentioned he's not that well known. Has he had previous success before you?
Right. So he had already some pretty good runners that run 28:15 on a 10K, for example, or were top of the country in cross country, but never, he had some guys qualifying for European cross country, etc., but never for a European track championship or world championship. So it's really, we're learning together. Like I say, it's a learning process.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking about some of those kind of Euro cross countries, I believe you made a Euro cross in what, 2017. So would that be literally your second year running, basically, or your something like that?
Yeah, this was literally my first year running or something. I was still at a fraternity at that point. Like 3 days before that, I was still partying until 7 o'clock in the morning, drinking too much beer. And my coach was... The beautiful thing about my coach, he never pushed me to say, like, stop alcohol. It all came from myself. And so that's what I like about my coach. It's not someone that will paternalize me, if you see what I mean.
Uh-huh.
He gives me a lot of freedom, and motivation had to come from myself and not from him.
Where did that motivation come from? What is your relationship with alcohol? You talk about it there. I've read various bits and pieces. You completely don't consume any alcohol?
Like right now, I'm a professional athlete, so I don't drink alcohol. I party after a big championship, but besides that, I don't drink a drop of alcohol. I drink like non-alcoholic beer, but not alcoholic. Because poison for the body.
Yeah, for sure. And mate, what was that turning point? Because how do you go from someone that is, like you say, going out partying when you're in college, but still going to Eurocross, to then thinking, do you know what? I'm going to take it really seriously and I'm going to try and shoot for the Olympic Games.
It came step by step. All my friends are people that play sports, but they also drink a lot. And so there was a lot of FOMO, if you see what I mean. Like every night they were telling me, John, come drink a beer, etc. And I just said no, because I want to achieve that in running. And they were like, I didn't achieve nothing yet. So they were like crazy, like, what are you doing with your life? I was like, I kind of have a dream, so I'm going for it. And yeah, and now they understand.
That's good they understand now, because I was going to say, did your social circles change? Did you lose friendships over that decision?
Like when you have a nightlife, then the social circle is very big, but not all of the people are like close friends. So my close friends stay the same. But all those guys that you just see in party, if you see what I mean, like they're friends of friends, I don't see them anymore. And so this is something that completely is gone out of my life. And like I kept my close friendships, but the rest is like gone.
Yeah, for sure. And now you're someone that obviously, like you mentioned to us before, you love Instagram, you love using your kind of social media. And that's somewhere where you talk about kind of not drinking and preparing your body in the right way. Is that something that you feel is important to you because of kind of the shift you've had?
How do you mean?
So in terms of like educating others around having that healthy lifestyle and wanting to get the best out of yourself, do you feel strongly about that and educating others because of, I guess, the changes you did yourself growing up?
Yeah, for sure. Like if I only run without social media, I have less purpose in what I'm doing. And like I get really on a daily basis messages of people saying like, thanks for the content you're putting out, because it motivates me to either achieve big dreams in running or just to start running, etc. So all kind of levels. And I like to receive these kind of messages because then I'm seeing that I have a broader impact than only doing it for myself. I see that like I'm helping society a little bit, and it gives me a lot of purpose in what I'm doing.
That's cool. I'm not sure many athletes would admit that sort of social media and impacting a wider community is a reason they run. It's almost, I almost feel like that's frowned upon, you know. It has to just be purely kind of for yourself and not for the wider community, but you're different.
For sure. Like, I started running for myself because I feel the need to always, like everyone, to challenge myself and surpass myself. But running for 8 years and chasing a dream and living the life of a monk just for myself, it's a very selfish lifestyle. And so Instagram's helped me to share this with other people and to feel like more purpose.
Have you had negatives from Instagram yet? Or are you still very much kind of riding the wave? I must say a lot of your content is great. Your YouTube channel is amazing. And I encourage everyone to go discover it. But have you had any sort of negative experiences with it so far?
Not a lot. Like, I'm quite glad that, for example, I'm overwhelmed with positive messages. But of course, there are some people that start to hate on YouTube. There are some comments with people saying, oh, you're on the juice, you're doping and all those things. And I kind of like this kind of comments, to be honest, because it means that what I'm doing is kind of superhuman. That people don't trust what I'm doing. So I see it as a compliment. And I would like to receive more hate because I love hate. It's a fuel. So right now I'm not receiving enough hate.
There you go. Anyone listening, John's invited you to yeah, start please. Hating. But like you say, like superhuman performances, right? And I think it's I guess, not just your personal best, but if you look at your progression, it's crazy, right? You've come from someone that, I'm literally just looking now, 2017 you run 8:30, and then that's you just started running, and now you're a 7:40 guy. Like, it doesn't happen to most people. Like, what do you put that down to?
I'm just super lucky with genetics, that's all. Of course, yeah, a lot of people have good genetics. You have to, as you know, be disciplined as well, but I'm just lucky with the genetics because I see that I progress more than other people. I don't work harder than other people. I think everyone at our level and at also, like, national level, I see many people, we all work as hard, and it's just, I'm lucky with the genetics.
That's a fair point. I mean, that's pretty cool that you admit that and you recognize that. I think, yeah, a lot of people want to play the card that...
It would not be fair to say that I work harder than a lot of people that are amateurs, so that have a job besides running, and that run, for example, great times, for example, 14:30 on the 5K, etc., which are great times, and a lot of those guys, we work as hard, and... Just some people progress faster than others.
Talk about, you know, that progression and where the training is. And you are someone who, I mean, we kind of mentioned it before, you're a bit of a free spirit. And, you know, you've got your coach at home, but, you know, you very much look to be training and working with a lot of elite athletes on the circuit. Mm-hmm. Talk about the power of mixing with a lot of different athletes from all different backgrounds, nationalities, because you seem to have connected with quite a few already, even in the kind of short period of a 2-3 year period, really, where you have kind of got to a world-class level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Like one of the mottos, like one of the life principles that guide me, it's like you're the average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. So if I spend time with people that are not chasing super high dreams, I think I would not chase high dreams as well. And so I wanted to surround myself with people who I could learn from, and that's also aim super high. And that's why I knew, all right, I have to go on training camp with the best in the world. And so 2 years ago, I looked on the internet to the world rankings of the 1500, the 5K, the 10K, but literally I knew no name because I was new in athletics. And I contacted like everyone on Instagram, like, hey, I want to go on training camp with you. Do you have a bet free with your group? And of course, a lot of people either didn't respond or were like, okay, that's nice, but kind of weird you're asking that, so no. And then some people told me yes. Like, so I went to Flagstaff with the Dutch Federation, the coach Thomas Lewanowski, right. The coach of his Lagos, etc. I learned a lot from them. The Canadian team told me yes. Like, Charles said, yeah, like, we have a bet for free. You can come if you want. Bit weird, but you're free to join. That's how I met them. And
that's
so
crazy.
It's actually like my federation, my country, doesn't care about middle distance. They support me, so I'm very glad with that. But it's not a priority, middle distance, so they don't organize like training camps. And that's a big positive, I think, because it allows me to join training camps with a lot of other federations. And so I'm in touch with a lot of physios from different federations, and I learn a bit from different coaches, from different physios, and that's how I take a lot of knowledge in the past years that helped me a lot.
That's an amazing story. Out of all of those, you know, people you mentioned and you contacted, I'm surprised that you know, Lewandowski and that group were the most welcoming, the most open, because from us on the outside, they seem like quite a closed off group.
Yeah, it's maybe because I'm Belgian. And yeah, if you don't know Thomas Lewandowski personally, he's a super friendly guy.
Yeah.
That's cool. What did you, I mean, we're interested as well, like, what did you learn from that you've now taken into your own training principles?
Like, for example, I learned about the double threshold method. The Norwegian training method is something I learned by talking with a lot of athletes. And then, of course, I read the website of Marius Bakken, etc. And I remember 2 years ago, I met Andreas Almgren here in Flagstaff. And he told me, yeah, I was the 800 meter runner. And then I always got injured. And then I started doing the double threshold. It's lower intensity, but much more mileage. And I never got injured again, despite the higher mileage and just because I lowered the intensity. And then I ran a 13:01 on the 5K. That was like 3 years ago for Andreas. I was like, whoa, that's crazy. And it's from guys like that to hear like this kind of story that inspired me to adapt my training. For example, I learned a lot from Eric Avila, if you see him. Who that is? It's like a British American runner. Learned right now a lot from a physio on the Canadian team that told me about alignment of my back and such things. I won't go into detail, but these are all very specific things that I learned. And then I take lessons from that. I make changes into my mobility routine, strength routine, training. And this allowed me in the last 3 years to not get injured once.
Right, we don't mind if you do go into detail on your back. We've got some nerdy listeners, to say the least, which they might find that quite insightful. And there might be others who can use that as well. So talk about this back issue that you had.
Okay, like, it's really specific. So I've right now a bit of inflammation on the tendon around the knee, around the inner knee here. And it's the tendon that comes from the hamstring. Mm-hmm. And so like my physio is giving me strengthening exercise for the tendon, etc. And then here a super good physio, her name is Marilou. It's also the physio of like like the Canadian guy, Mohamed, yeah. And the 800 meter guy also. And she told me, all right, John, I see that your back is too much going that way. That means that my hips are going that way. That turned my knee a bit to the inside. And when my knee is turning to the inside, it puts a lot more load on the inner tendons and on my hamstring. And so that's what, for example, one of the potential causes of this high load on the tendon. And so it was not a strengthening issue. It was more an alignment issue. And so she realigned my back and suddenly like my tendon feels much more relieved. And that was a new learning for me. Like, all right, in the future when I will have this tendon issue, I know that it's not only about strengthening the solution, but another solution is going to someone that can realign my whole body. Great.
I think that's a good message for a lot of people as well, because you would never have discovered that physio if you hadn't, you know, took a chance and you've gone out there on a training camp with the Canadian team and you've gone out your comfort zone a little bit.
Totally. And then another thing that I learned is when I went to Kenya, I learned about the muscle massages. That was 3 years ago. Like, their muscle massages hurt a lot. Like, it's a torture. And then I was like in the beginning, but that will just destroy my muscle. It's very bad. And I saw that I recovered like never before. And that's why I learned that I need super hard muscle massages. Mm. And since then, I have 2 muscle massages each week. And so that was another learning point for me. And so I'm learning a bit of pieces everywhere.
Aren't they like, what are they, a massage in Kenya? Is it €3 or something? You can literally get them every day, can't you?
Oh, yeah. It's very cheap.
Yeah. Obviously, with some of the things like that, you can implement yourself into your own training as an athlete or into your own kind of schedule, I mean. But what about some of the training? So things like the double threshold, is that where you then take this idea, go to your coach and say, I want to start doing this? Are you working on that together, or is he happy for you to kind of just jump in with other people and see how it goes for you?
Yeah, so first when I proposed a new thing to my coach, he's 60 years old, so he has already his own philosophy. So there's a bit of friction, like, no, I don't think that it will work for you. And I have to push it a bit, but eventually he listens. And then when we see that I progress more with this method, it means that it's positive. And yeah.
Mm. Something which we would love to talk about 2024 in quite a bit of detail, because it was an incredible year for you.
And it obviously started with that fast run in Boston, that 13:03, and then that set you up for the summer. Before we talk about that, though, Europeans, you know, you're in contention, you're right up there till, was it 200-300 to go? You then blow up, and then you documented this really well on one of your YouTube channels. You know, you recognized that you didn't have a good finish on that day, and you worked on your speed. Come the Olympics, you know, you're kicking with the Jakob, you're making the final, and you're looking smooth, and then you obviously go on to come top 12 in the Olympic final. And I think, is that something that you know, you and your coach are quite good at? You immediately recognize a weakness. I think for a lot of athletes, it would have been easy to just overlook it and just go, look, it just wasn't my day. Something weird happened, and kind of carry on. But you went all in on improving your speed in that kind of pre-Olympic training block. And how did you do that?
Yeah, so the thing is, I always analyze what went wrong in races, why I could not race better. So this is a process that I was already thinking about for 1.5 years, where I got dropped in every major championship. I was also in the World Championship in 2023 in the 5K. Like my closing peak was really shit. I was in the World Indoor Championship on the 3K, where Josh Kerr won. And I got dropped again, and I told my coach, I keep being dropped. I need to work on my closing speed. And that's also where my Instagram helped me, because when I share it on Instagram, people tend to want to help me. So I get a lot of tips and advice. So that's also the power of Instagram. A lot of people help me through personal message. And so that's why where I got in contact with different people. I got in contact with an Irish coach. He told me what to do to better my speed. I got in contact with Jordan. It's like the engineer from the On Running, from the shoot. He was super friendly. I met him at Glasgow, like at the World Indoor Championship. And there we started talking about how to better my speed. And so that's where I stacked a lot of knowledge about how to improve my speed. I told it to my coach. First, a bit of friction. He was like, no, you don't need it. Then we implemented it in my training, and we worked on it for 7 months. And the results were there at the Olympics, where I was like blown away, because I was expecting to fight for the 8th place in my heat. And I finished 3rd, pretty comfortable. I was like, what is happening? I saw that it helped.
And what did that training look like exactly for someone who didn't, you know, you didn't have the best closing speed to then do what you did in the Olympics? What did that specific speed work look like?
It's pretty basic. So if I want to raise the ceiling of my top end speed, to be able to, in a second step, raise the ceiling of my speed under fatigue. And so I never worked on my top end speed. So I'm doing, for example, 4x60 meters, 5x80 meters, with a lot of rest between it. And it's super basic.
There's no secret. Max effort, max effort strides, 5, 8 seconds long.
Right. And then working a bit on my 200, like doing 200 meter repetition a bit more frequently throughout the year, instead of only pre-competition. And those two things, like working my speed under fatigue more frequently and working my top end speed very frequently, helped me to raise the feeling of my speed.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's clear from talking to you now, like how much of a, I guess, a student of the sport you are, always keen to learn. You're also someone who's going out there and coaching others as well. So how did you get into that? How did that all start?
The thing is, when I graduated in 2022, I had suddenly this Olympic dream, and I had no money and no sponsor. And I'm quite lucky. Like, my parents told me, all right, John, we're helping you until the Olympics. So the day after my graduation, I took a plane to Kenya, because I knew my parents would cover my training camp. And that's where I started to go on training camp. And I knew, okay, in 2 years at the Paris Olympics, my parents will stop funding me and I need funding. That's why I started to post on Instagram to try to build out a coaching, a business and all those things. And it took like 1.5 years because before I could monetize it. So it was a lot of work behind the curtain in the shadow. And 1.5 to 2 years later, finally now I can sustain a living with my coaching, with my Instagram, etc. And so, yeah, so it was purely a strategy for me 2 years ago to be able to survive as a professional athlete.
That's incredible. I think a lot of people listening will be sitting there going, have you not signed a professional contract?
Yeah, I don't understand as well. I reached out to all the brands. They all told me to basically, like the basic thing, like, oh, we don't have money anymore. of course you got money, but I'm not interesting for them, which I can understand because the Belgian market is not a big market for the shoes. That's why I'm also working on my social media to try to become more interesting with social media. But right now they're not convinced.
Crazy. 03 Ghana Olympic finalist and struggling. I was, because one of my questions was going to be...
I'm not struggling. I have a good living through my social media and coaching, and yeah. I'm living the life, man. Like, there's nobody telling me to run certain time because, like, I have no sponsor that says, all right, if you don't hit this time goal, you will have a cut in your payments. No, like, social media pays anyway, and my coaching as well. So I've literally no pressure, and I'm doing this running for myself, for my own dreams, not for a brand, not for someone else. And so that's a huge freedom that I feel, and it gives me a big peace of mind.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you're getting to a better and better level, is it harder and harder to juggle? You make it look easy, by the way, but is it quite difficult to juggle that social media and building that? I can imagine 2 years ago, spending time to do that social media stuff, did it come easier because you were potentially not training at the same level? You kind of weren't going for these high profile races, whereas now you very much are. You've got higher expectations on yourself as well.
Right. At every step of the process, there are challenges. In the beginning, it was like when I started social media, I was a typical guy that, like, I never put once on social media in my life. Mm-hmm. So I was like also the guy criticizing those influencers, like, what are they doing with their life, etc. I was a bit of a hater myself.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, I myself did Insta bitch that I was hating on. And so that was a challenge in the beginning, to like show myself and my personality in public. It was a bit of a friction. And now 2 years later, it becomes a challenge to juggle it with running, of course. And that's why, for example, 1 week ago, I posted a story where I asked if someone will want to become my manager / assistant to help me. And I got a huge amount of people applying. And so now in the coming weeks, I will go through all the applications and find someone that can help me to do part of the task for me, so I can focus 100% on running, because that's still my main priority.
That is amazing. I mean, any advice for those who kind of want to do what you do? Because like I said, you've had a lot of success from juggling social media and running at a very, very high level. And I think there is a belief that you can't do both. But I think you're proof that actually you can.
Oh, it's so easy to do both. Because as long as you have a good camera on your phone, you can ask someone to film you during training. And then between the training, you have to rest or study, I don't know. And then you have time to make videos and just make the videos, and things will grow in the...
Yeah. I think you need a certain mentality and mindset, though, which you have got, and it is very refreshing. I think, is it fair to say, like, others would potentially struggle? You know, they'd have doubts, they'd have anxieties about how they're seen by others. But you seem very good at blocking all of that noise out and just being 100% yourself, and that energy comes through.
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky with my genetics again, that I'm just genetically very positive minded. And as you say, I can easily block negative comments about me. And I just have the runner's mindset of, like, the endurance athlete mindset, where I know that I don't expect results in the short term. Everything is long term. The road is never one straight line up. It's always up and down. Then I know that eventually the road will be up as long as I'm consistent.
Yeah, talking about that road, mate, what's coming up for you in the next few months? Obviously, you're out training in Flagstaff now. You mentioned to us you're heading to Boston, PB on the horizon, sub 13.
Yeah, I will not be in peak shape. But I want to run the world standards, which is 13:01. And so, yeah, I want to run sub 13. And then there are a couple of other big championships coming this year. Yeah, bro, I'm just dreaming.
That run at Boston last year, was that a shock to you that it went so well?
I was expecting to run 13:05, the standards, but doing it was like, feeling was amazing. Like, it's like qualifying for the Olympic final. Like, the feeling there is indescribable.
That's amazing.
Because I was not... I knew I could make it, but I knew that my chances were very little. And so actually doing it and doing better than I ever expected, it's something that was just indescribable.
Yeah, we haven't
we haven't really touched on Paris at all. You know, as a kid growing up, you obviously had the dreams and ambitions to be an Olympian in field hockey. That didn't happen.
Never. Even in hockey, I would just want to be the national team, but I never thought about the Olympics or something like that.
Right. But then when you, like you said, when you kind of cut out alcohol, ended college, you were very focused on making the Olympics, or were you?
No. When I cut the alcohol in the beginning, I still didn't think of World Championship and Olympics. I was just thinking of trying to better myself every day and chase my physical limits. That was what I liked. And I remember some people told me, John, I think you can make the Olympics. I was like, what are you saying? You're just crazy. And then it's only 2 years ago when I graduated that the Olympic dream started.
Right. And did it live up to that?
Yeah.
That's great to hear, mate. That's brilliant. Just on Boston as well, like obviously one of the things you've mentioned kind of, I guess, the benefits, but also some of the issues with not being sponsored, but look, you can wear any shoes you want, any gear you want. So we don't often get to speak to anyone at your level who really can say what you think the fastest shoes are out there, right? Like, what are you going to wear in Boston? Because everyone says, oh, yeah, I'm sponsored by Nike, so I wear this, you know? Yeah. What do you think?
Okay. Like, first of all, I think it's very personal because what I've learned now by reading a lot of science, it's that the interference between the personal biomechanics and the shoe can be very different between different people. So what I think for me is that the Hoka spikes were pretty good for me. That's why I wore them at the Olympics. Right now, the stack height is too high, so they're illegal. And to be honest, I didn't try a lot of spikes, so I will just go for the safe choice, for the Dragonflies. But I would like now, because I'm unsponsored, to buy again all the spikes, try them out, compare with like a power pod, like from Chorus, for example, and then make my conclusions based on data and feeling.
That's a video in the pipeline.
Sure.
Actually, on technical data as well, your S&C program is pretty insightful and pretty thorough as well. You use a cool little device for that. Do you want to just talk about your S&C program a little bit?
Yeah. So that's, again, something that I wanted to optimize is working with a good physio. So I worked with 5 physios before I really landed on the perfect one, because some physios gave me a strength and conditioning program that was 2 hours long. I was like, sorry, running is my priority, not gym work. Mm-hmm. Other physios worked with super high-level athletes, with medal winners, and so I was just like this little guy that they didn't care about. So I was like, all right, I need someone that cares about progressing with me. And that's how I landed with, like, I think the perfect one in Belgium. His name is Frederic, but yeah, you won't know him. And he's very good because he's still reading the science every day. So he's never content with his current knowledge. He's still reading knowledge. And that's how you know that strength training based on speed and not based on weight is the best thing you can do. Because when I'm tired and I'm lifting a certain amount of weight, it's not the same physiological stimulus that I'm giving to my body. If I lift the same weight, then I'm super fresh. So when I'm basing everything based on my velocity, then I'm giving the same stimulus to my muscle fibers. And so that's why we work on velocity. And also, if you aim for a higher velocity, you can work more the neuromuscular stimulus. If you work with a lower velocity, it's more like strengthening the muscles, etc. And I don't know a lot about all of that. I'm trusting my physio. But so it had to do with giving the right stimulus to the body, firstly. And secondly, differentiating between different kind of stimulus, like neuromuscular stimulus or pure power stimulus, etc.
It's fascinating. And so when you're doing, let's just say, a basic exercise like a back squat, you're more focused on the speed of that than the weight.
Yeah, I focus on the speed. And for example, if I'm too tired and I see that don't hit that speed, then I have to decrease the weight a bit to hit that speed. If I'm super fresh and I see that my speed is too high, then I have to add some weights to give the right physiological stimulus that's correlated with the right speed.
This is quite unique. Have you come across other elites who are kind of doing this strength program?
In other sports, yes, not yet in running. And my physio says that it's the future in running. That's made me convinced that in 10 years, everyone is doing that.
Yeah. And do you think that kind of contributed to your increase in speed as well? You obviously mentioned doing those shorter sprints, but to me, it sounds like exactly the sort of training that would help develop that kick as well.
Yeah, that's something I forgot. Sorry. So the strength training is also a big part of my improved speed.
Yeah, for sure. Well, look, John, it's been great to chat to you today. We really appreciate it. And I think just throughout, like your passion for kind of learning about the sport has just come across so well. So we really appreciate that. And obviously wish you the best for Boston and the season ahead.
And we hope we can welcome you in the UK to a race. So if there's any races,
it would be awesome.
It'd be cool to have you over at some point.
Matt, Ollie, thanks a lot. And keep doing great work, because guys like you promote the sports. And I love your podcast. So thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Warning. The following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.